Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and volunteer sheriff's deputy, Sean Rowney.
I'm Edwin James, human relations.
And with us, as always, in the warehouse, our producer, Mr. Alex Ward.
Everyone I know who skis is dead.
Every week, we're just regular guys talking about our favorite show, The Office. This week, we're going to talk about Season 1. The Season 1 aired on NBC March 24th in 2005. It's only 6 episodes. It was, of course, adapted from the British TV series of the same name, created by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant. Greg Daniels is the producer who brought it to America, along with Ricky and Steven and Larry Wilmore, Lester Lewis, and some writers early on in the show were Michael Schur, who plays Moe's, of course, Mindy Kaling, Paul Lieberstein, who's Toby, and BJ Novak, who plays Ryan.
Yeah, I think as we prepare to jump into it, it's important to kind of remember where we were in terms of context, like when the show started. So obviously a remake or a port of the British Office, but this was the second show that NBC had tried to kind of do this with. There's a version of Coupling, which I've never seen, that tried to come over to the U.S. and right. also kind of failed. I remember, or I have read, that after the pilot aired, some people were kind of confused by it because it was kind of a shot-for-shot remake of the BBC pilot.
Right.
And then it seems like receptions was mixed, somewhat positive for the rest of the series, but not popular enough overall that it seemed guaranteed that it would get picked up. I remember hearing that it was kind of on the edge.
I don't have a quote in front of me, but I do remember reading somewhere that Ricky Gervais was a little uncertain that it would work for the American version just because he thought the humor was very British.
Yeah.
It was really dry, very like deadpan and cringe comedy that he didn't think that Americans could handle, which is
I would agree
true.
That in the pilot, when it's almost like line for line, it's not just like one for one
right.
in terms of like some of the lines don't translate as well.
Yeah.
You know? And like, cause Steve Carell is delivering Ricky Gervais lines. Like,
yeah.
It's Michael Scott, not David Brent, delivering these lines.
Right.
And then I think too, I remember hearing that like when The Office was getting picked up, still not that popular yet. I think end of season one, maybe going into season two, all the promotional money at NBC was behind My Name is Earl.
Yeah.
Right. And The Office was like a follow. I think The Office followed My Name is Earl, or maybe even a lead in.
That's right. You
know, which they is funny to think about. Yeah.
Right. Let's see. There's 6 episodes in this season, as we mentioned. We start with the pilot, The Office and American Workplace. Episode 2, Diversity Day.
All-time classic.
All-time classic. Healthcare after that, mm-hmm. where Dwight has to pick healthcare for The Office. The Alliance is going to be downsizing, and Dwight asks to form an alliance with Jim.
Absolutely, I do.
basketball after that, where they play basketball with the guys in the warehouse. Mm-hmm. And,
am I Michael Scott or am I a basketball machine?
and we finished with Hot Girl, the finale of season one.
How many filet of fishes do you eat? It's over the course of several months,
Ryan. let's start by diving into the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
The first introduction we get to Michael Scott is the only joke here is that he mistakes he makes a sales call for Jim. Jim has come to the master, to help him with, the library. He can't close the sale on the library, and Michael closes the sale, that Jim, I guess, wasn't able to close. So we see that Michael's a great salesman, but immediately after that, he says, "You are a gentleman and a scholar," and, then apologizes because he realizes the person he's been talking to was a woman.
She had a deep voice.
and that's how we meet Michael Scott. The ultra offensive, very petty, doesn't know the meaning of inappropriate, boss of Scranton Branch.
Boss, branch of comedian, Dunder Mifflin. Friend, lover, Michael Scott.
World's best boss.
And coming off
Spencer Gifts.
Coming off the BBC office, it's like, if you know the David Brent character, they really did make an American version of David Brent. The way the way he was a little more heavy set, the way his hair was slicked back, they just made him detestable.
This version of Michael Scott is not the same version of Michael Scott that we get even episode one of season two.
I remember too hearing that Steve Carell didn't watch the BBC. I don't remember if he never watched it before he started the show, or if he didn't watch it like in the lead up. He didn't watch it to prepare at the very least.
Right.
Because he didn't want to take on the mannerisms of David Brent. Like, David Brent's always adjusting his tie, you know, little things like that. Like, I don't think Steve Carell wanted to pick up on any of that. So there is a little bit of it's obviously a different character, right?
Yeah.
A different actor, whatever. But it does very much seem like a David Brent-esque character in the first season.
He smiles more than David Brent does. David Brent's always kind of got this, like, snarl and very, like, serious, arrogant look on his face. But besides that, not too many differences. I mean, Michael's really obnoxious and offensive in these early episodes.
David Brent humiliates himself in a really funny way all the time. And Michael Scott doesn't do it in the same way. He says, like, inappropriate things, and he creates a lot of funny moments, but it's not the same. Like, I'm trying to land on it. But
you feel bad for Michael Scott, and you don't really for David Brent.
He brings it all on himself.
There's a couple moments
you feel for him?
I think the entire show leads up to, I feel like the challenge Ricky Gervais was like, this is more for the BBC office than we will do.
And we'll do an episode on the BBC.
I feel like the whole challenge is like, I want to see if I can make the audience feel bad for this guy by the end of the show.
Yeah.
Or like feel sympathetic for him.
Yeah.
And with Michael Scott, I feel like it was a little different. Whereas David Brent, I feel like wanted to be seen as cool, like a cool, powerful guy. Like Michael Scott really wants friends.
Right.
You know, I feel like that's the main difference between the two of them.
Yeah.
Afraid of how much they love him.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. David Brent has a mission to be famous, almost like Andy Bernard does later on in the series. Whereas Michael Scott does care about the people in the office being a family. It seems to be one of his main missions. But
I mean, eventually Michael does want to become famous. I mean, there's Threat Level Midnight, his movie, his book, Somehow I Manage, and his comedy special, Here I Go Again. Bop, bop, bop.
Hey, Golden Face.
Yeah.
Go puck yourself.
But let's keep going through the pilot.
Right.
I mean,
Let's talk about Jim, who we also meet first in the pilot, alongside Michael. He expresses that he hates working there.
He plays up the slacker thing so much in the pilot. Like, again, based off Tim the BBC, but man, he really, really goes for it.
Yeah. He clearly has a crush on Pam.
Yeah.
And we do meet Pam as well. Do we meet Roy in this episode? I'm trying to remember. Of course we do. But when?
Exactly. I don't know if we meet Roy. I don't remember exactly, but we definitely meet Ryan. Right, Ryan the temp comes in.
Yeah.
And you know, Michael looks out and surveys his domain. Right. So so we meet Ryan. We meet Dwight. Of course, that's the other major character. I mean, in the first season, the focus is really tight on Michael, Jim, Pam, Dwight, and then Ryan.
Yeah,
like, is kind of
just look at the DVD
character.
Covers for each season.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's sort of the key map.
I did in watching this episode or maybe another, I noticed that all the we see the bobbleheads on Dwight's desk because he loves bobbleheads. They're all baseball players. I didn't know that about Dwight.
Are you sure they're not table tennis players?
Baseball.
They are as
heroes. Is that a similar uniform? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay. In this episode of the pilot, Michael is showing off for the cameras a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of like establishes right away that he's going to be playing to the camera and making jokes at other people's expense. Mostly Pam in this episode. Really hard on Pam.
Yeah, he gets nailed.
And just horrible like sexist comments, making Pam feel uncomfortable in front of the camera. He gets a message from corporate and tells her to file it in the special filing cabinet for that, which is the garbage can.
Waste paper basket, he says. That's the British line that comes over.
Right. Oh,
there it feels go. A little out of place. Waste paper basket.
Nobody says waste paper basket.
There's an aspect in the pilot of, I think they do a really good job of this, because they need to set up, like, why is this office being filmed? And it's like, I think they do a really good job of making it seem like Michael Scott clearly signed something with this documentary crew that corporate can't undo, and now they're stuck with this crew at the office. And Michael's like, I have an audience.
Yeah.
I get to do this. Because, like, over the... We see David Wallace. We see Jan come in. And the way they look at the camera initially is with contempt of, like, oh, right. I forgot Michael is doing this deal.
Something just occurred to me. Do you think that Michael made this deal and actually got a lot of money out of it to give to the branch?
I don't think he got any money.
Yeah. But...
He's not smart enough to negotiate that.
Well,
like,
I mean...
He was yeah, film me.
They give... I mean, you know... Michael, in a lot of ways, seems like super safe right from the beginning of the show, that he drives them crazy and they can't get rid of him. Maybe he had a golden ticket idea.
I think we're going into wild conjecture territory.
All right.
But I think the pilot sets the baseline for the show. It sets the sort of the monotony, the mundane, the sort of existential boredom, right? Of
the color palette.
Exactly, of working in the office. And I think, obviously, the BBC sort of inflection is there, but I think as it moves past the pilot and gets into Diversity Day, I think it gets a lot stronger.
It doesn't take very long.
No.
I think it really
gets its own legs in Diversity Day.
Yeah. The pilot especially just feels so, like, so much to establish.
In the pilot, we also meet Jan. We kind of establish this, like, that Michael thinks he's not corporate and that he's, screw corporate, and that's his whole mentality. And of course it ends with him fake firing Pam, which is just him so mean.
Right.
She starts to cry.
And I think that's sort of what I'm speaking to, of like he's acting differently, even more insane than he normally does. Like, he's doing a cartoon version of himself because there's cameras here, and you can kind of see the other characters being like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
You're already crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
So next episode is Diversity Day. We're getting away from, the BBC office a little bit here. This is an original.
Although, one of the cringiest episodes.
Oh, my goodness.
But I love that.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
So Michael, of course, gets in trouble for specifically for quoting a Chris Rock stand-up bit very aggressively.
in rewatching, so obviously... Right. The premise is Mr. Brown comes in from corporate to host a diversity seminar, right? And it turns out later on that this whole diversity thing was set up to be a lesson for Michael, and he brought everyone in for this diversity seminar as a way to kind of make Michael feel not that embarrassed, right? And the incident was the Chris Rock routine, which Kevin starts to impersonate, and then Steve Carell or Michael Scott goes off and does the bit.
He's doing it wrong.
And in rewatching this, you know, Steve Carell said the show wouldn't work today. Like, just watching that moment where Michael is reciting a Chris Rock bit and ostensibly, you know, they bleep it out, but ostensibly using the N-word next to, like, a black guy. Like, that's a crazy scene. That would not happen today.
Right.
Like, you could, that was, it's so hard to watch that. Yeah, it's bad.
It's a funny point you bring up. We don't have to dive in too much to it, but that Steve Carell came out and said he didn't think the show would work today because of the political incorrectness. But I do think that, it is offensive, you know, it is shocking. And that is the point. And I think today the show's still popular today.
Of course.
So I just
in rewatching that moment, it seems way more extreme today than it did when I watched it.
Right.
I don't know, 12, 13 years ago.
Right.
You
right.
know what I mean? That's all I mean to say. Like, it's even more shocking and even you know, less appropriate than it was back then.
This was advertised as a family show.
That moment too, though, there's the moment when you see Michael watching the bit done wrong and how agitated it makes him is a really, really brilliant character moment, though. Like, that is so much about Michael Scott, where he's like, I think I'm the funniest in the office. Yeah. I should be doing this bit.
Right. Someone else is getting out attention. Wrong,
which is funny because of how many other things he misquotes for the rest of the show. But right. like, he's so thirsty to be the funniest and have all the
right.
attention.
He can't even be logical to the point of understanding. Like that's
yeah.
And how come Chris Rock can do a bit and I do this and it's hilarious? Everyone gets laughed and I do the exact same bit.
Yeah.
Same comedic timing, and everyone gets upset.
Like.
What there, you want, a cookie?
Yeah, there's some of the stuff from season one that he... There's some stuff from season one that goes away, mainly physically, but so many important character things are really well established in early on in season one.
Obviously, the other thing that happens in this episode is where Michael hosts his own diversity seminar
right. oh my God.
After Mr. Brown leaves.
Yes.
And he has everyone act out stereotypes.
He taught us nothing. He abandoned right. us.
Let's get real.
Yeah. So he gives everyone note cards to put on their heads. It's... amazing.
He starts diversity tomorrow because
today's almost
today's
over.
Today's almost over. As Abraham yeah. Lincoln once said, if you are a racist, I will attack you with the North.
And those are the principles that I carry with me in the workplace. There's a moment at the end of that video where he turns it off and somebody's like, I had a hard time hearing it. And Michael's like, well, that was because of issues with the camera. And it cuts to Dwight, and Dwight is so visibly upset that, like, he's not lived up to Michael. And I think comparing this to other seasons, like, the sort of Dwight
gets
aspiration to Michael is so much stronger in this season than it is in the rest of the
show.
And
Michael is ruthless the way he uses Dwight mm-hmm. and throws him under the bus. But we'll get to that a little bit more. We also have to talk about in Diversity Day, the Mindy Kaling bit, where she comes in late to the conference room. And he just starts imitating like Apu from The Simpsons.
Just the worst accent.
And then, she slaps him in the face.
And then he says, that was great. Now she knows what it feels like
she
to be a minority.
Gets she gets it. He starts tearing up. So
now she knows what it feels like to be a minority.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Is Kelly the only person that slaps Michael?
No,
that can't
well,
be the
well, hold
time.
In the whole show,
yeah.
Pam slaps Michael at one point.
Oh, mm-hmm. right.
And
Toby gets the chance, and he doesn't take it.
And
Oscar gets a kiss.
Mm-hmm. Who? I feel like Dwight gets him at some point too.
Yeah, knock knock. I mean, who's there? KGB.
Oh yes.
Viva last the questions. Yeah. Knock knock. Yeah,
a lot of headshots.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a great one.
Yeah, and anyways, also, you know, Kelly. Kelly Kapoor, normal person in this episode.
We also see the beginnings yeah. of Kevin, where he's still
normal.
Wearing his, he's still got his.
I think
his
you
card.
Do, man.
Yeah. And then later it's maybe some spaghetti. All right, Kevin, this is over. We can move on.
Yeah, everyone's, the minor characters are much more normal. Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Well, we start to see the minor characters get lines, moments to kind of shine, and like it's the first kind of shot of the ensemble kind of growing.
And we get some other spare people that you never see again or know their
oh,
names.
Yeah, like, there are some random people in there.
That's the thing about this whole first season.
Yeah, there's a girl with like short red hair.
Whole lot of randos.
Yeah. Devin's in the background. Mm-hmm. Devin who gets mm-hmm. fired in
season two,
Halloween.
And then comes back in season 9.
That's right. Well,
good for Devin.
There's also that moment at the end where Pam falls asleep on Jim's shoulder.
Yeah,
and even though Jim loses the big sale to Dwight and gives Dwight that little
That's
bottle
right.
of champagne, he's like, not a bad day.
Right.
So Jim and Pam, that storyline continues, right?
Establishing the TV relationship of the 2000s. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Is there a better one? I don't think so. Not that we care about.
We'll wait.
What about Michael and Helene? I'm just kidding.
Healthcare, episode 3. Michael is told by Jan that he needs to pick a new healthcare for the office. He picks the gold plan, complete with massage therapy and
acupuncture.
All these other fine
acupuncture,
things.
Yeah.
And then Jan, explains to Michael, no, you need to pick you need to save money and cut costs and pick a different healthcare plan. And then he realizes just how terrible of a job that is. He tries to give it to Jim. Who says, I am not going to do that, but do you know who should do this?
Hard cut to Dwight.
Hard cut to Dwight, yes. He wants to know who he can fire.
he sets up in the conference room.
As a temporary workspace?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's a one-to-one for the British office as well, where Gareth Keenan does the investigation.
Yeah.
Yeah, giving crumbs of power to to Dwight and Gareth. Always good comedy.
And Dwight sets out on his mission.
He slashes benefits to the bone. He saves this company money.
Did he cut more than he needed to? Maybe. <Schrute. laughs>
Yes, he said. Jim says you cut more than you had to, and he goes, "Yeah, I knew what I had to do." Right, and then of course you get the moment where Jim and Pam kind of go back to him, and they do the fake diseases.
Right. Well, also Dwight does explain that he doesn't need health care. He has perfect immunity. Never been sick. Mm-hmm. And Jim says he doesn't have any antibodies, then he doesn't need antibodies. He can control his
cholesterol
at will. He can raise and lower it.
Why would you want to raise your cholesterol?
So that I can lower it.
There you go. And then you get that brutal moment where Dwight has to read off everyone's diseases that they listed.
Right.
In case they're not real.
Oh, boy.
Spontaneous hydrogentoplosion.
That's not a real thing.
Killer nanorobot infection.
Anal fissures.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, but no one here has it.
Someone has it.
just
and then Jim locks Dwight in that conference room, and Michael promises everyone a big surprise to get through the day.
Right.
And he calls. He's trying to set up a trip. Doesn't work out.
He calls a casino and
travel agency, and they're like, "You can call the casinos directly." And he's like, "I already did that." He tries to organize a trip to the mineshaft elevator, right. And they're like, "It goes down in the ground, but it moves really slowly."
That's right. He wants to get everyone on the mineshaft
and
elevator.
Then he finally ends up with ice cream sandwiches.
Yeah, and they hope this isn't the surprise they've been waiting for.
But it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a great one, I think. And then I think let's move on to the Alliance, right? That's the next Jim and Dwight, you know, rumors of downsizing kind of abound throughout the season, and it's kind of the undercurrent. So Jim and Dwight form an alliance to survive downsizing, and Jim uses it as a moment to mess with Dwight.
Oh, yeah. This episode is real good Dwight fun.
This is the first episode of The Office I ever saw.
Oh.
Yeah. I remember when it cut to Dwight and he had dyed his hair. That was like that was a moment where I knew I really loved the show. Yeah.
Blonde Dwight at the end.
Exactly.
Of it. Yes.
Yeah.
That was amazing. This is also there's a very uncomfortable moment between Jim, Roy, and Pam. Mm-hmm. Pam kind of knows what's going on with Jim pranking Dwight, and so they're having a moment where they're like laughing with each other at Pam's desk, and he's like kind of like. Got his hand on her shoulder. It is like very close to her, and they're laughing a lot. And Roy comes in and flips out.
Jim tries to throw to Dwight and explain what's happening.
Right.
And Dwight throws Jim under the bus.
Dwight's like hiding behind that plant.
Right.
He's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
He also gets Dwight to go into the box, right?
Right.
Hide in the box in the warehouse, and then Pam comes through. And so that's a great moment with just Jim really messing with Dwight.
One thing I did read online, why does Dwight dye his hair blonde after he hears Jim sell him out to...
I don't remember.
No, I'm just like, it just doesn't make any sense.
That's funny.
Just doesn't make any goddamn sense. I do like that moment where Dwight picks Jim up in the car in his car in the parking lot.
When he's playing,
screeches into the parking spot.
He's playing "Angel of the Centerfold," yeah. Right?
Really they could loud. Be listening.
And then we jump into basketball.
Basketball is a fantastic episode.
Which is just Michael at his sort of I don't even know. He's kind of at his best where he's just like he's so. Confident in his basketball game.
Right.
And he's so excited to challenge them to that.
What is wrong with me today?
Supposedly the reason that they're having this basketball game, according to Michael, is that he was down in the warehouse making baskets, swoosh, swoosh.
Jaws were dropping. And then eventually it becomes like a Jim and Roy kind of thing where Jim is going against Roy.
Direct competition between...
Right. Who's going to work on Saturday? Is Pam going to be at the mall with Jim to save big on brand names? Or is he going to be is she going to be at the lake with Roy on the jet skis?
That's right.
First mention of the jet skis, which come up later.
Yes.
You also have Dwight trying to impress Michael. He's trying to get on the basketball game. One of my favorite Michael Dwight moments is when he's like, "Michael, I really want to be on the team." And he's like, "You embarrassed me last time in front of Todd Packer." And Michael says, "The hand strikes and gives a flower. You will not play basketball."
What does he give him instead? I think he tells him that he'll decide who works on the weekend.
Right. And then he brings in
smallest amount of power.
Yeah.
He brings in Stanley because he assumes he's going to be good at basketball. He tells Oscar that we're going to save him unless he needs a baseball or if we ever need a box.
Right. He does.
Yeah, I'll call you come baseball season.
If we ever need to box. Yeah.
He doesn't want to let Phyllis on the team, but he does.
He also doesn't want her to be a cheerleader either.
Right. Yeah, okay. Right.
And then the game ends when Michael gets fouled. He calls an end to the game. They're ahead.
Yeah.
And then it's who's ahead at that time?
Right. He just asked Angela who's ahead. Mm-hmm. And then conveniently kind of gets an elbow in the face and says
ends
it's
the game. Yeah.
Deliberate, intentional foul.
But then immediately caves.
And then the
posturing from the warehouse.
And then he caves again and says, no, guys, I'm giving you this day back. You don't have to come in. He's like coming in an extra day to work is going to prevent us from being downsized. Right. End of show. And then the last episode of the season is Hot Girl, where we have Amy Adams come in, sets up in the conference room to sell purses.
Amy Adams, who took the bus to a random office building to sell purses in the conference room. She needs a ride home at the end.
But she also gets a text while Michael's talking to her, and she's like, "Oh, my ride bailed."
Okay, I missed that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, but Amy Adams sets up. Michael is trying to hit on her. He's trying to use the sales prize as an incentive, the espresso machine that he buys.
Yeah, Stanley's not happy about that.
Right, yeah. And then
the Bucks.
Jim and
Starbucks, they're everywhere.
I should have spotted another addict. Right. It's funny to think about that and him talking about how coffee is literally a drug that speeds people up. And he's like, back in the 80s, man, they moved a lot of paper.
Hey. Does Michael drink coffee or not?
So that's the thing, because later in the show, it's revealed that he drinks milk and sugar, right?
Every morning.
Yeah. Go even further forward, when the training day episode in season 7, when he meets D'Angelo Vickers, he orders a Kahlua sombrero when he's at the bar, which is just Kahlua and heavy cream or something like that.
Some more pranking with Dwight.
I love when Dwight goes in to talk to her and Jim and Pam are voicing over.
Yes.
Is this Silvio Gini?
Oh, this is the prettiest of them all.
Oh, yeah. Definitely step in and out of it like that.
And then Dwight
comes out wearing the bag.
Yeah.
And he's right. I did that's it. Right. I did it.
I mean, another mean moment for Jim pranking Dwight, convincing him that it's manly to have a purse. But again, Dwight just being disgusting too, talking about
how
Amy Adams would be a
great
good,
mom.
Yeah. childbearing hips. And
yeah. I don't even want to say it.
No.
But then Michael and Ryan clean his car, which is great. They clean Michael's car. You know, he's like, this is my Dakar Noir. He's like, no, it says night swept. He gets a perfect smell of Ryan. There's still some in the straw.
How many filet of fishes do you eat?
So over the course of several months, Ryan.
But then, still.
Do you want this power drink? What flavor is it? Blue.
Blue's not a flavor.
Blue Blast.
Ooh, Blue Blast. Yeah.
Put that in the trunk. I also want an Arctic Chill. I want that in the passenger cup holder. But anyway, it turns out Jim goes in and
snags it.
Jim goes in and he talks to Katie. And they actually start dating after that, and you know that continues all the way into season 2 with the Booze Cruise episode. And then that's the end of the season.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's very short.
That's all there is. Impressions from rewatching it? Tone is very different in this season.
Yeah. I was gonna say one quick thing. I'm reading. Hot Girl received the lowest rating in the show's history until it was beaten by Tallahassee in season 8.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy. It took, that. That's a huge gap. And that.
What's Tallahassee in season 8? Is that when they go?
Tallahassee is when they're down in Florida. Andy is
the first one
back. No, I don't. It might be. I'd have to look at the episode list. But I remember, I know Andy's still in the office because he's a receptionist at that time.
Doesn't he drive? Is that what he goes to get?
That's called
Aaron
Get
back?
The Girl. That episode's called Get the Girl. So I think it's after Special Project. I think it might be the episode. Gosh, I'm going to have to think of it. Oh, it's where Nellie is, up at the front, and she's doing the presentation, and she makes Ryan introduce her, and Dwight has to pull down the projector screen.
Right. Oh,
That whole thing.
Okay.
But let's bring it back to season 1.
Okay.
I think overall, this was one that I think we were excited to talk about, or I was excited to talk about, because this is a season that I don't go back to all that often when I'm rewatching The Office.
You get into season 9 and then you start it back over at season 2.
I just go all over the place. I don't go in order.
Right.
But for me, I very rarely go back to season 1, and this is because I've watched it a lot over the course of my lifetime.
Yeah.
Like when it first came out and I first became like a huge fan of The Office, like I watched season 1 on DVD a lot. Yeah. I watched season 2 on DVD. So those were the seasons that were like in the heaviest rotation when I was like first getting into the show. So I had seen them so many times that I don't go back to them all that often. But in going back to them, you know, for this show, I really enjoyed it. There are moments that I had forgotten about or moments that I had caught again. I don't remember what episode it is, but this is season 2 that I'm thinking of with that moment. But here's the moment. Jim is at the vending machine. He's talking to Stanley. Michael comes in. The episode is called The Secret. Michael is trying not to talk about Pam, but is absolutely talking about Pam.
Right.
And Jim is trying to avoid the situation. And Michael says to Stanley, "How long does it take for you to pick a drink?" And he just hits a button on the vending machine. He goes, "Peach iced tea. You're going to hate it." But overall, I think this season is so much more brutal than the rest of it. Just in terms of its tone, the way that really it's tough. Cut, like the way that the jokes hit, like it's really funny, and it really is more reminiscent of the British Office in that way. But it's amazing how quickly it shifts over from the end of season 1 to season 2. Like just the way that the episodes end.
Oh yeah,
like it just cuts to the credits.
I mean, look, back to back. You know, if you're gonna butt the seasons up next to each other, right? Season 1 ends with Hot Girl. And then season 2 starts with Dundies, okay? Hot Girl ends so hopelessly, right? No one really wins, okay?
Jim.
Gets the girl that he doesn't want.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of just...
Or he's like...
Gets
or,
that date with Katie because like, he's
bored. Maybe this is my first step out of thought in love with someone I can't have.
Yes, but is that a good thing? I mean, I don't think...
Who won season 1?
Who won season 1? I guess Jim did. But still, Jim's not with the girl he wants to be with.
It's not a hopeful ending.
Or the girl that we want him to be with. Pam is sad because now we're getting that she does have a crush on Jim, but she's just too scared to leave her relationship with Roy, which is sad.
There are also moments in that episode where Kevin is like, "Are you jealous?" And she's like, "Why?" And he says, "Oh, well, she's prettier than you."
Yeah.
He's like, she says, "That's a really mean thing to say, Kevin." And then later in the episode, she's like putting on makeup and the camera catches her.
Yeah.
And she stops doing it.
Yeah.
And then Roy, when they're eating lunch, is like, he says, if I wasn't dating Pam, I'd be all over that. Right. And Pam says, "We're not dating. We're engaged." Right.
Yeah.
So she feels really bad. I mean, the whole episode makes her feel pretty bad about herself. Right. To your point, there's not a lot of hope at the end of that episode.
No.
Right.
And then if you watch on Netflix, as I usually do, the way that it transitions from the end of Hot Girl to the beginning of Dundies is so night and day. Like, you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way that Dundies ends is very helpful, right? You kind of, there's, you know, Jim and Pam share
Pam,
a moment.
Pam kisses Jim.
Yeah.
And
people lift up Michael, too.
That's right.
Michael gets that milkshake thrown at him at the Chili's and Pam's like, "Come on, let's keep going," and everyone applauds and he feels good and everyone feels good.
We learned Michael's true feelings for Ryan. We got to see a visit from Ping.
Right.
And we heard Michael ruin the lyrics to a number of classic songs, which for me has ruined them for life. I remember hearing this in a DVD commentary, but the whole concept is almost like you can make fun of people in your family, but no one else can, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of how it feels when those guys start making fun of Michael and they throw the milkshake at him.
Right. Season 1, maybe that episode would have ended differently. Go ahead.
I also think that from season 1 to season 2 and beyond, Michael is less, in season 1 to season 2, his transition, he becomes less ignorant and more stupid and needy because the way that like his jokes and his intentions are kind of framed, it's a little more like you give him the benefit of the doubt. Instead of being like, "This guy is just objectively terrible," it's like, "No, this guy is really dumb and really needy."
Yeah.
In season 7, when he goes to counseling, Phyllis says, "I'm glad Michael's getting help. He's stupid and has a lot of problems," which I think is a perfect encapsulation of like the way it kind of goes, right? Like he's so much meaner in season 1, I think. Just the way that they frame him. Yeah.
So much meaner. I mean, He doesn't ever care about hurting someone's feelings or.
Yeah, it's just the way that it evolves. It's really slight and it's very mm-hmm. subtle, but I think it's a meaningful change.
This whole first season, actually, like looking back at the episode list, it's sort of like they put Michael in every different aspect of like his life. And to see how it plays out, where it's like his sense of humor and diversity today, his leadership in healthcare, his manhood in basketball, his romance in Hot Girl. Like you kind of see all these different playgrounds of like Michael's weaknesses in every area of his life. And
it's
then
a great
they
way
just
to think about
poke
it.
Holes in it. And
yes.
It's kind of how it plays out over the rest of the series, just in a more gradual way.
You know what the other difference is between this Michael and every other Michael is the jacket. Season one, he doesn't wear a jacket. So other episode, he's always wearing the jacket.
That's
right.
That is true.
He's wearing the white shirt with like the sleeves rolled up.
Oh, and he's got balding,
too puffy.
Thinning hair.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird how his hair is thicker after season one to season two.
Yeah,
some good work there.
Yeah. I do love Michael and Dwight's relationship in this season so much. I mean, it's just like it's so cold. Michael's so cold hearted to Dwight after putting him on that healthcare assignment. Everyone's getting really pissed, and Michael comes out and acts like he does. He's like, "Damn it, Dwight!" Like,
well, Jan needs it by five.
Oh God, it's just like, and Dwight just stands there quietly with his head down. Like, Dwight is just such a good soldier for Michael, and he is not deserving of that at all.
No,
I think in general, Dwight's commitment to the company and to the branch, his like. The way that his character is, the severity of it, it really grounds the show, you know?
Yeah,
like, totally.
He's like the hard worker, like almost to a fault, you know?
Yes.
He's such a company man. Like, I think that's such an interesting counterpoint to Michael's sort of flippant way of just kind of dealing with everything and Jim just kind of being the too cool for school kind of character.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Dwight, Michael's a class clown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like he wants to like give the middle finger to authority and stuff like that, even though he's too scared to do it for real.
Yeah, Dwight's like if no one cares about this, then what are we doing? Like you need him in so many ways.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. That he's in a weird way, he kind of brings a lot of weight to the show and kind of helps out in that regard.
He's like the most load bearing person in a lot of ways.
And then
the whole show,
like his and just the way that evolves over the course of the show is so interesting. Like from that sort of. So committed to the company and then so tied to Michael. He looks up to Michael so much. And then the way that kind of moves around and the way that Dwight still remains committed to the company, but maybe changes the way that he looks at Michael, you know,
the way he lashes out him at the roast when
don't
first
you ever
defends
speak?
His, and then he's like, you don't have any land.
Don't you speak to me like that. You short, pathetic little man.
I know.
You have no friends or any family or any land. Because Michael is just an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that is such a great little pressure release by Dwight there. Anyway.
I love, in terms of another pressure release, when he punches Michael, when he hits.
Oh, in the
fight episode in season two, right?
Mm-hmm. Or even when Michael gets his condo in Office Olympics and invites Dwight to move in with him, and then Dwight starts
this
to,
off when you're 80.
Yeah. When Dwight starts to annoy Michael too much, he's like, forget it. Mm-hmm. And Dwight's like, to be honest, I'm kind of relieved.
Right.
I have a beet farm.
I have my own crossbow range.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I agree. I think Dwight's another character that gets kind of set up. Also, Ryan is introduced.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan is sort of he also feels like a port from the BBC office a little bit. Mm-hmm. That other sort of temp worker. But they have different, they use him in all sorts of different ways over the course of the show. But in the first few seasons, he's Michael's, you know, protege.
Right.
He's everything I'm not.
he's a reason to have a tour of the office. He's a reason to meet all these characters and have characters explain things to him.
Yeah.
You kind of need that.
Ryan is a little bit more of an audience surrogate than Jim even at that point.
Oh, totally.
Right.
There are a lot of funny moments where Ryan becomes like a member of the staff. Like later on when... Like Ryan has never made a sale, right? And they have to push Ryan up in that regard. And like, there's a lot. His character is so interesting. We should do a whole deep dive on Ryan. That's
we'll do a Ryan for sure.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Any concluding thoughts on season one? What if the show had continued in this tone? Would you have been
I was thinking about that. What did the what would that do to Steve Carell's
career?
I mean,
you know, the BBC office was over after two seasons and a special.
But it was
I'm going to tee it back to you because I think we've talked about this in other episodes of the show, like how much you love this tone.
Yeah, I love it.
And I guess I would like to hear what you have to say first as to whether, like, how would you feel if the show continued in this way with this sort of tone, severity,
I would have loved it. I would have loved it. I mean, really, what would have had to happen is I think Jim and Pam would have gotten together a lot later. You know,
probably would have been less seasons.
There probably would have been less seasons. There would be less jokes. There's not as many. Like, I mean, later on in the series, when all the ensemble characters are fully formed, and they can just jump in with little one-liners that, you know, in the context of their character. Whereas in this one, it's long monologues from Michael and things like that. I would have enjoyed it. I would have loved it. I don't know if it would have been as popular.
I mean, I agree. I also love season one. I loved it when it came out. Like, I loved it rewatching it, right?
Yeah.
I generally prefer the tone that's a little bit brighter, a little more rapid fire with the jokes. That's just me personally. But I'm sure if the show continued this way, I would have loved it. I love the British office,
I mean, I think that, like, you know, this goes back to, like, Americanizing the British office. Like, American television needs to be escapist. So as the show goes on and they all start to be buddy-buddy with each other and they're like a family and all these things are happening that involve all of them and stuff like that, like, that's a bit of you know, an escapist fantasy, right? I wish my office was like that and it was more interesting and, you know, a lot more fun and the stakes were a little higher, because the first season is the reality, which is that
it is
boring. And there is no happy ending to this. It's just the same monotony day after day. My boss is super offensive and obnoxious.
So I think for me it's less about escapism. And if you're going to compare American and British TV, the difference is that British TV starts and ends, right?
Yeah.
There is a clear beginning and there's a clear ending with almost every show, right? And then with American TV shows will go on as long as they can if it's still popular.
Yeah.
Think about The Simpsons. Think about Family Guy, right?
Yeah.
Other shows. I mean, obviously those are animated, so it's a little bit different, but like 30 years, right?
Yeah.
So when you look at The Office, look at The Office, people are still asking for a reboot. They're still asking for it to come back, right? And they went 9 seasons, right? And so as long as the popularity is there to support it, it's going to stretch out. And a show like that is inevitably going to change. I mean, I think you can watch the way that TV looks change over the course of The Office, you know?
Totally.
Just the tone. You can see it shift from
the color. I mean, it's more colorful.
More colorful. Totally. The shift from like the 4:3 standard resolution, like a more widescreen sort of shot. Like, generally speaking, that's the big difference. And that the show is going to continue as long as it's popular. I think the big difference with the British Office is that it ends, and that it ends in like a certain way. And then you have the Christmas special, which is the Where Are They Now? And I think like just comparison, I think, or compare, oh my gosh.
I like comparison. That's a fun one.
Just in comparison, think about all the Jim, Pam moments that we have over the course of the show.
Yeah.
Casino night, right? And leading into their wedding, their part, they're having children, right? And then it's season 9 where they have the sort of marital conflict and then they come back together at the end. When you think of that in comparison to Pam, oh my gosh. When you think of that in comparison to Tim and Dawn, right? They have their moment at the end in the Christmas special where Tim gives Dawn like the pencil set, right? Like that's such an amazing moment in television, right? Like that is an amazing moment, but like you have to earn that over the course of this cold sort of dry
show. Right. Well, that's the thing. Like okay. People are going to disagree with me here, but I did not ever need a Jim and Pam wedding episode ever.
I disagree with you.
Like it could have ended with them getting engaged for me, right? You know what I mean? Like it could have been slower,
but then we wouldn't have the Michael Scott paper company.
Because those moments, there are still moments that make you feel good without you having, you don't get everything you want sometimes, right? Okay, but you can
speak for yourself.
This is the BBC in the American office right there,
right?
It's like, which is what I hear people in England say, like you've talked about, Americans have a sense of it'll happen.
And here's an example. When the Christmas episode where with the iPod, with the video iPod, And Pam chooses the iPod over Jim's teapot, and he's heartbroken, and we're heartbroken. And then at the end, she trades back for the teapot because she's like, well, Roy was maybe going to get me an MP3 player anyway, so, you know, and it seemed like, you know, a nice gift. That's a really special moment. Did she break up with Roy and choose Jim? No. But you still kind of get that feeling of hopefulness and warm fuzzies without getting everything you want. That's my take.
I want to answer the question, though, if it had kept going in the way it did, because
you have to have them get married at some point because you couldn't have a long engagement between Jim and Pam, because that was the whole thing from the beginning of the
show. I guess you're right,
but right. let's move focus to your question.
They should have eloped in Cafe Disco.
In some ways,
Pam likes cheesy. Sorry.
With the BBC Office, it's like I've probably seen the BBC Office, the complete, like all the episodes in the special, way more than I've seen all of the US.
Right.
That mainly because of seasons 8 and 9. If it took out seasons 8 and 9, it'd be comparable.
Right. Yeah.
And I'll say that you can't watch that many of the BBC Office episodes back to back. At least I can't. I just start to feel really terrible.
Yeah,
I have the same thing with It's Always Sunny. I can watch 2, maybe 3 episodes at a time.
Oh, really?
And I need to go take a shower. Yeah. It's like I this doesn't feel good anymore. It's so caustic, right? So that just would never happen. They just couldn't do that, I feel like, to the U.S. market, and it would have ended after maybe 2, 3 seasons. The same thing.
It would have been a totally different show.
Like the BBC Office is a masterpiece. Like a total masterpiece. And yeah. I love the U.S. Office. I don't know if I would call it that. I mean, this is a larger debate we could have at some point.
No, but I agree with you 100%.
Like, I don't know. The U.S. Office is funnier in some ways, but the BBC Office is just so... It's much harder to watch for a reason because it's more real, and that's not what we want. We don't want real.
It moves in a single direction.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think we're comparing apples and oranges.
Yes.
Like they're not the same shows. Like,
no.
Right. That's what
if the U.S. Office continued down the path from season one, the characters would not have found themselves in the way that they did. The peaks that we talked about in season 4, the things that we love from season 7, all the best moments that we've talked about wouldn't happen if they continued down that way.
You're right.
Right? No.
The best case scenario is that you get a moment like Casino Night at the end of season 2, and then what? A Christmas special?
Right.
Right. The difference is like that you have closure, right? You have a finality.
I guess that's exactly what I was saying, is they're completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
But.
That was fun. Season 1.
I feel like we could argue about this for a long time.
We 100% can, but we cannot, actually. So take a quick break and do some trivia.
Yes. Let's do it.
We'll be right back.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
And welcome back to another edition. Well, this isn't frame-by-frame trivia, which is usually what I do. This is more giving you guys a break. Just general trivia. We're doing 2 questions from each of the first 5 seasons. So just a regular old trivia. Mm-hmm. And I did this because I didn't have time last night to watch an episode and take notes. But
all office trivia is great office trivia.
I did manage to find. So we're going to go through 2 questions, each from seasons 1 through 5. I was going to do just season 1 trivia. But it's fresh on your guys' minds.
Yeah, we've been rewatching a lot.
It's impossible to... It would be very hard to stop you guys with season 1, so we're spreading it out. Okay. That said, here's from season 1. At the end of the pilot, Michael says how many years he's been at Dunder Mifflin. How many years has he been at Dunder Mifflin?
12.
At that point, 12.
Yes, you got it. Ding, ding, ding. Who are the 4 people Michael says he considers his heroes?
Ooh.
Robin Williams. No, no.
Bono, Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, there's 2.
God.
There's 3.
And who's... Shia LaBeouf. No.
It's a tough one.
It's going to be something random.
The Pope? No.
You have the phonetics right.
Bob Hope. That's right. Bob Hope.
It sounds right. Season 2 from Michael's birthday.
Shiloh Jolie Pitt, because then their parents would have to come pick them up.
From season 2, Michael's birthday. What does the back of the jersey say that Michael gets from Dwight?
Oh, I know it.
John, do you know?
Doesn't it say Dwight? No.
From Dwight, number one.
Yes.
Dwight, number one.
Oh, my God.
From season two, The Injury. What type of MP3 player did Roy buy Pam for Christmas?
It's a Russian.
It's a.
This is one of the hardest ones.
It's like a Prism Zero disc.
Oh, you're so close. Prism's right.
You've seen one of these?
I don't know.
The Prism Duro Sport.
Oh, Prism Duro Sport.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you can throw it all day long if you want.
Throw it around, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's broken.
All right, see you later, Pan. Pam, Pam, thank you, man.
That The Injury is a really interesting episode.
God, that is a great episode.
This is something I wanted to talk about during our season one discussion. Now seems as appropriate a time as any.
Sure.
But the moments where Michael greets Pam, Spamster.
Yeah.
There are so many.
Oh.
He's like, Bamberger with fries.
And shake.
Yeah. And cheese. And shake. Right. Pam, Pam, thank you, man. Pamalama ding dong.
Pam! Pam, Pam, Pam!
Making copies.
On to season
She's not making copies.
Season three, The Return. What are the three words that Dwight uses to describe himself in The Return?
Relentless. Jackhammer.
Jackhammer's one. There's, he says three words, and then he gives five things.
Yeah. Unstoppable.
No.
Dedicated? I don't know.
Okay, you got Jackhammer.
I got Jackhammer.
Hardworking.
Hardworking, okay.
Alpha male.
Yeah.
Merciless. And my favorite, insatiable.
I just remember Jackhammer. That's my favorite.
Insatiable. It's just a weird way to describe yourself. In Beach Games, what's the name of Stanley's team name?
Blue Team.
Yes, correct.
Oh, I was guessing.
Yes.
Nice one. Done, sir.
In season four, Night Out, what basketball team does Dwight get into the club with?
It's New Jersey State, Northeastern State.
You're close.
It's so close. Yeah, it's right in that realm.
Yeah.
Sean?
New Hampshire State.
It's Jersey State Varsity. Yeah.
Jersey State Varsity.
Similar kind of question in Job Fair. What's the name of Pam's old high school?
Oh.
Where are they?
Ugh.
Oh, and no.
Scranton High.
No.
It's not Bishop O'Hara, because that's where
Where Toby.
Yeah, Toby and went. Katie. Man, yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know. What is it?
It is Valley View High School.
Valley View. Okay.
Yeah. Valley View.
Yeah.
VV.
All right.
Justin Paulsnack.
Into season five, what position did Charles appoint to Stanley after Michael left?
Oh, I got it.
What was the question?
What position does Charles appoint to Stanley after Michael leaves?
Oh, his productivity czar?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct. The best person to pick for that.
Kevin, I want you on phones.
The face Stanley makes when he says that. It's classic.
I think he calls him... No. I'm thinking of... I thought he was going to call him Stan, but that's Gabe, where he goes, Stan, I think you're next. And he's like, it wasn't me. He goes, what a lovely rich timbre your voice has.
It wasn't me.
All right, you get out of here, big dog.
I want to own a decommissioned lighthouse.
In Heavy Competition, season five, what does Michael's Rolodex card on Dwight say?
Oh, I got it.
Tall and beats.
Very good. Way to close it out, Sean. Yes. That's it. That's all I got for trivia.
I win.
Yeah. You did. All right, take
we'll
us out.
We'll just say whoever was ahead when the game was over.
Hey, Sean, are we on social media?
Oh, yes, indeed we are. Thank you so much for asking, Alex. We are on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. Check us out.
Search Michael Scott Podcast Company on those platforms. You'll probably find us.
You can email us. You can leave us a voicemail.
What's that number?
That's right. What is that number? What is that number?
I don't know the number.
I don't know what the number is.
Zippity zoppity, give me the sloppity.
If you go to our Facebook page, there's a call now button. If you're on your mobile device, just hit that call. See what happens.
That's right. You can leave us a message. Leave us a trivia question, a hot take. There's a call now button when you go to the Facebook page.
Bam.
Thank you so much for listening. Join us next week. Like and subscribe.
Dink and Flicka. Da 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 da.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island, USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.